My name's Chris Hills. I've previously worked in some high-level positions within housing associations, and particularly my last employment with Metropolitan Housing. I was with a specific team tasked with specific, not normal kinds of work.
Can you say something about housing associations? Because we had council housing before the war. We had it all the way up until the Thatcher era. And as I understand it, a housing association was a sort of halfway house. The idea was it was a private business of some sort, or a charity, or a friendly society that was designed to build houses a bit like council houses, only more in the private sector.
You're right, and believe it or not, I was actually a tenant of one of the first housing associations in Beckenham. And in those days, what they tended to do is to take over the older properties, refurbish them, and then let them out under their own tenancy agreements.
Right, so they were buying just houses as they came on the market that needed
At that
refurbishing.
time, yeah. Yeah, at that time when they first started. Yeah, you were, and I can take that would have been around about 1971, 72.
And how does this all fit in with the Thatcher era where they started selling off the council housing?
Different because council homes were obviously under the councils. Where you are right that the housing associations were more, what's the right word for it? They were friendly type associations. They were to try and fill the gap, if that makes sense, and to try and increase the amount of social housing rent initially.
What is the principle behind this whole idea of social housing and council housing then?
It was to add more to the councils because the council only used to get a certain amount of, how can you put it, where they would give money to them to build a certain amount of council homes. Obviously, when you're talking about Thatcher, Thatcher wanted to get rid of as many as possible, which is why she allowed people to purchase council homes with a promise that each one would be replaced, but never was.
Right, well, what do you put this down? Because one of the reasons people are naturally biased towards buying a house is because once it's yours, your landlord, whether it's council or anyone else, can't evict you.
Well, theoretically, they can if you because you don't own a freehold, you only own a leasehold on the property.
Well, yeah, but once you've paid off your mortgage, you do, don't you?
Yeah, in effect, you do own it. Yeah, if I mean I worked for Metropolitan, and that was working with they were then the biggest housing association that were doing mixed tenure. And it grew from the 80s to the point where they be were beginning housing associations like Metropolitan to doing shared ownership, what they call shared ownership. So what would happen is someone would buy a share of that home. The other part of the reimbursements were in rent, but they could call what they called staircasing, own more and more and more of the property until they fully owned it, but it would only ever be on a lease.
Well, I mean, you know, if it's a lease, you don't really. I suppose, actually, if you think about it, if you've got a flat, you will never own the freehold because that's the land at the bottom of the building.
That's absolutely
And so you
right.
can actually have a lease, which is pretty much the same as owning something.
In effect, it is, yeah, because what happens is you get away from having to pay a rent, but you still have to pay service charge.
Ah, yes, there's always the service charge. Anyway, look, I know you got involved in policy as well. So can you just tell us how you got involved and what happened?
Well, basically, I've done lots of different things, Tony, and my last Before I worked for my first housing association, I actually had my own business. And after we had the partnership had to break up because it couldn't afford to carry the two of us. So I went out and found work. Initially, my wife at the time was working for Enfield Council and was on a good income. So I only went to work for my first housing association to get the, what do you call it? Flexi hours, so that I could do a different set of hours to my wife at the time and pick the children up from the childminder. And I went in at a very low level. But I think I got very quickly involved in clearing up that housing association's some of its finance problems. And I had actually, that was with Sanctuary Housing, I cleaned up all their three London branches with financially and became a member of a team that were assessing a new system. But
So once you got the job in there, they realized, actually, look, this guy could be really useful doing something
absolutely.
else.
Absolutely. It was the same with Metropolitan as well, because again, I went in at a low level. But I think there were CEO to CEO conversations there because I took a 2 year break in between, but I left Sanctuary on principle. Something happened there and I left it on principle. And 2 weeks into my notice period, there was a big meeting because this was about them getting a new system. And the CEO and his secretary, we went downstairs for a smoke and a break, and he pleaded with me not to leave and offered me anything I wanted to stay. And I said, no, I'm leaving on principle. And I took a 2 year different kind of job and then went back in to Metropolitan Housing 2 years later with the same thing about having flexi time and not really worrying. So I went in at a very low level. I couldn't really, honestly, I couldn't be honest about my profile because I was doing special projects for my first company I worked for, which was Vision Hire, the TV people. So I had a background of special projects, if that makes sense. But they latched on really quickly, and particularly with MHP, because in the beginning, when I first started work there, the CEO was in the same building and everybody was scared of him. But I used to get in the lift with him and just say, how are you doing, Tony? Are you all right? just that kind of thing. And I believe, and I can only suggest to you it's a belief, that there must have been some CEO to CEO conversation because it was he that approached me and asked me to do a special project for him. And I was quite surprised at the time.
Can you just say something about Metropolitan, where it was based, and how many roofs and how many tenants you were looking after?
Well, I was working for the shared ownership division at the time, so they were the biggest of all the housing associations at that time, as far as shared ownership was concerned. How many would it have been? Oh gosh, they were based in London and less at the Midlands. So they weren't huge, huge the way they are now, but they had, without doubt, they were the biggest and the first to do shared ownership. So I'm suggesting maybe it was around about 3,000 properties shared ownership at the time that I was working at the beginning.
Yeah, so this
That
special
doesn't sound
project
a
you were
lot.
approached to
Yeah,
take
no, it,
on a special
yeah.
project.
Well, the first thing he did, the first meeting I had with him and the finance director, was they asked me if I could do something about the void loss on the shared ownership properties, which was quite horrific. It was about £5 million a year. And I said, yeah, I'll have a go at it. And I went away and upset the sales department because I brought in selling off plan, which they always swore couldn't happen with shared ownership. And within a year, that money had disappeared and gone almost away. But it upset the sales team, obviously, because I had overridden them to get this done. But it was after that was when you and I spoke before, where Blair and Brown took away the funding from councils and housing associations for building new properties and gave the funding to private development companies on the basis that they would build a certain percentage of affordable homes on whatever project they were building. And I can probably suggest to you they never built the amount that they should have done. And it was there that the CEO asked me to set up a project. And you asked me earlier about who I partnered with somebody called Rosalind Tudor, and she was an ex-manager from a number of housing associations. So we spent a year together on this project. And the basis behind the project, and the only brief that I was given was to make affordable housing in a mixed tenure sense that worked. It was as brief as that, you know. So
Can
I ended
you
up.
just explain what you mean by mixed tenure exactly?
That means that it's either rented, shared ownership, or full ownership on a lease, all kinds of mixed tenure.
Okay.
But not with a private developer.
Right. So you embarked on this project. What was how did it all start?
It started with me getting involved with the London School of Economics and Joseph Rowntree, who are another big persons in social housing, and they partnered me up in the background. So I was doing the work through Metropolitan, but in liaison with the London School of Economics and Joseph Rowntree. And they also managed to get some. I'm not sure if you're aware of what went on in the America in the in the 1970s, 80s, where they began these big projects that were in every New York, the Bronx, Chicago, and everywhere else. But they brought them in for them to give us how can you a background of a self-contained project which had work for the people on the estate and stuff like that. So they were involved as well.
Could you just take us through your thinking at the time? I mean, it's a long time to spend with Rosalind for a year doing this, and what you came up with.
Well, we worked well as a team. She was very much a ticking the boxes and crossing the things, where I've got such a random mind, it was all over the place all of the time with all these ideas, and she would keep me in control. She would control and say, you know, things like, sit down, let's just deal with this before you go on to something else. But my mind was all over the place. Just to give you some background that this is true, when the three mayoral London mayoral elections ago, Sian Berry included in her manifesto 50% of that project. I phoned Sian Berry and she passed me on to her PA. When I was passed to him, he said, "Oh, hi, Chris." And I said, "Do I know you?" And he said, "No, you won't, but I was at the London School of Economics when you did your project." And I said, "Oh, really? So can I ask you why only 50% of it was in your manifesto?" And he said, "Well, you know the reason for that." And that's to give you some background on that, that it was in their manifesto, 50% of that project.
Yeah, so how did you arrive at the conclusions that you did? I mean, what you're saying is, and maybe you could just give us the name of the project as well, just make it absolutely clear and the date.
Yeah, it was called the Mixed Tenure Project and it was in 2006.
Yeah, and the idea is exactly what? I mean, this is a bit of policy that can be picked up by a politician and implemented. And actually, Londoners, of course, are screaming out for decent housing.
Absolutely. Now, the underlying things and the main reason it was not supported by banks was because one of the major things that any public land was for affordable housing only, not for private developers. And the thing about that is the fact that there is no land cost in the properties that you're about to build. It's only the build costs that are in the project, not the land costs or the value of the land or anything, because it costs nothing. That allowed all the homes to be in there as being affordable. And I think when we did all the economics on it, any loans that were taken out would have been repaid within 20 years for the building of the build. But it
Okay,
was also.
I mean, how did this go down? Because I would imagine that once you've come up with the project, you're going to have to sit down with other housing associations, possibly even ministers and bankers, and make a decision about whether to go forward with it.
Well, there was that meeting once the project was finished and it got the go ahead. There were the five major housing association CEOs, a government minister, and I can't remember who it was or his name, but he wasn't a senior person, and a banker.
So before you describe the meeting, can you just, in a nutshell, sum up the proposal? I know you've said it just now, but in a nutshell, what were you saying?
We were saying that the properties would be outside of the general market, so and they were in ratios, fully rent, shared ownership, or full ownership on a lease. But and also it was flexible tenure. So if somebody got in trouble that had bought a property, the project would buy it back and leave them in the property on rent, and just buy out the mortgage that was on the property. So it was a really flexible thing about keeping, and there was a maximum income level that people had to qualify for these schemes, not a minimum, a maximum. So it always went to affordable residents.
Yeah, so the idea is it's aimed at low income families, exactly the sort of people that so desperately need housing and secure housing.
Absolutely. And the security of having it in flexible terms. So if they did get into trouble, they didn't have to leave their home. It was recycled back into the project. But because it was away from the private market, any value added to people that had bought the property was cost of sale, not inflation.
Okay, so take us back to that meeting, and take us through it. What happened?
Well, it was fully supported by the government minister and the five CEOs. And then this other person that had sat there quietly with a smug look on his face turned around and said, "It's a great idea, but we'll never loan any money for it."
So, I mean, he was a banker, obviously.
He
Did he
was a
say
banker.
why?
And basically, because they couldn't repossess the properties or anything like that, because if someone got in trouble, the project bought back the property themselves. They didn't allow it to go on the open market, which happens with most repossessions.
Now,
But
our banker friend, all they're doing really is they are lending money to a housing association to build this. Why should they care that they personally
it
themselves
wasn't just
can't
that.
reap?
They said they wouldn't give mortgages on it either.
Well, I mean, we know, don't we, that when people have been buying council houses, etc., over the year, they had mortgages on them.
That's right. That's right. So this is, and remember that began with Thatcher. So we're talking about 2006 here, where Blair and Brown had just moved all the funding for new build properties away from councils and housing associations to private developers, which they both got shares in, by the way.
Wow. Anyway, so what do you put this down to? I mean, over the years since then, I imagine this banker's attitude has sort of crunched around in your brain. What do you think was really going on there?
I think it comes down to some very basic things, Tony, that they can't repossess, which they, and especially in current times where people are getting into trouble with their mortgages and everything, immediately whoever's loaned the money can repossess the property. And it's crooked, isn't it? If you think about it logically.
Oh yes, exactly. It's the bank that's lending that wants the
Wants the
property.
property, yeah. And
Yeah, bizarre.
remember from that time to now, as particularly in London and places all over the country, but especially London, the value of properties has gone through the roof. So when they repossess, then they're repossessing the whole property, no matter how what value the mortgage is.
Look, what you're saying doesn't seem to make any sense, in that actually that it's going to be the housing association that will be paying back the loan to build the properties in the first place, not the tenants or not the people
That's
that buy
right.
it from the housing association.
No, that's right. And it's built into the rents and stuff like that calculate the income from the estate itself.
Now, what you're saying sounds to me like a bit of a sort of fork in the road, which could have immensely helped the housing crisis in London. Why do you think we have a housing crisis in London? Why is it that these sorts of solutions are knocked on the head?
Because they can't profit from it, Tony. That's the only conclusion I can make this late in the day.
Well,
If
the
that
banks can profit because they lend the money. And then they're paid that money back with interest by the housing association.
That's right. That's right. But remember, I said to you, this was all costed out by us. So whatever money was loaned to build those properties was all repaid within 20 years. So there was no, the only interest that a bank would have after that would be mortgages that they've got on any of the properties that were shared ownership or for sale. It was a fully costed project. That was part of the things I've got to give thumbs up to the London School of Economics and everything like that, because they were the ones that helped with behind the scenes calculations around that.
So, apart from this obviously sensible idea, what are your thoughts about sorting out the housing crisis? Because we have a whole bunch of migrants too coming in who are increasing the demand for housing as young couples are finding it impossible to buy a house.
They can't buy in London, Tony. They really can't buy in London. One of my daughters purchased a property and she's having to live in Waltham Abbey because it was the time that they bought, which was maybe 10 years or so ago, that was all they could afford. But now they've got the additional cost of travelling into work from that outer borough because they couldn't afford to buy inside the borough. And I live in Finsbury Park, and I'm in a rented property. But there's a brand new estate that's facing the park, where one of the two bedroom properties that face the park has just come up and been sold immediately for £468,000, a two bedroom flat.
Well, I know it's not a strange thing to have a £1 million house now in a basic like 2-3 bedroom house in London, if
Absolutely.
it's in
And
the right place.
well,
So, what are your thoughts
I was
though
born
about?
and raised in Peckham. Now, I've been back to Peckham. No one can afford to buy a house in Peckham at all. You're talking millions of pounds for houses. Ridiculous.
Why this obsession with the price of housing then? Why has it been going up and up,
It's
ratcheting up?
the land value, Tony. That's what's been right going up and up. And you see that project took the land out of the equation with it being public land. What Blair and Brown did by giving the funding and everything to the private developers, he also gave them access to large swathes of public land for zero money, in effect. On the proviso that the developer would improve the roads and the waterworks in the area and this and that, that never happened. And it was all, from my perspective, now this late in my life, and that being a long time ago, it just seems so crooked.
Well, it sounds like a racket.
It is a racket, but it's not a racket that's for the benefit of anybody that lives in afford or can only afford affordable housing, because they can't afford now.
So who does it benefit?
The developers and the private sections of whatever estate is built.
One of the things I see quite a lot of is land banking too.
Land banking is a big thing, yeah. Housing associations used to do it themselves, but they were not just banked, they were banked until they had the funding to be able to build on it.
Yeah, but nowadays, I mean, and I've seen this in my housing association I was a director of, is they're actually sitting on the land, waiting for it to go up in value.
That's right, and that's the private market psycho behind that, because that's not meant to be the way it is with councils and housing associations as they were originally set up. They were there to provide housing for the needy on lower incomes.
Now, I'm sorry to say, I don't know the name of the current housing minister. They do seem to change quite a lot these days. But I mean, if you were them, and you had your one sheet of A4 paper to scribble out a policy to sort out the housing crisis, what would be on that piece of paper?
On the very first line, it would be all public land is for affordable homes only. And the second one would be that those the same criteria, really, that people that would be able to apply for purchase, whether it was shared or full, would only be allowed to do it on a maximum income, not on a minimum income, which
Now,
would be set.
before we started recording, you told me you're from a Romany heritage. You must wonder sometimes, is it better just to get back in a caravan and tour the country? Because housing seems to be so expensive. In fact, we have now got in Bristol between 700 and 800 people living in caravans that just have either been evicted or simply cannot afford to pay the rents in the city.
Suggest to you that we have got a lot of children and a lot of grandchildren. So is I am secure in my home where I am. It's a housing association flat. So I'm happy with that. I have owned properties, but I don't want to own any more, you know. And it's too late in life as well, Tony, you know. So I just want to live my time out. I mean, it's a rent. The rent is lower than private rent, obviously, because it's a housing association. And my travelling days are over. I've travelled lots, you know, with businesses and stuff like that. I've lived in Liverpool. I've lived here, there, and everywhere. You know, those days are gone now. So I just want to spend the rest of my time in the privacy of my own home, secure, knowing that it's not going to disappear overnight, in an area that I'm really happy that I'm living in.
But what about the youngsters? Can you understand why maybe they think, look, this is just crazy. We can't afford to rent or get a mortgage, so let's just get a caravan.
Sounds like a great idea. I mean, my youngest daughter is currently being evicted, not for lack of paying rent or anything, because the landlord wants to recover the property because it's close to a railway station and he knows he can get a lot more rent from it if it's not somebody that's under a council dictate, if that makes sense. So next month she's going to be homeless with two children, two young babies. Now the thing is that the way we are as a family, there's a catch-all for her, but it can't be positive in the long term. She needs to have a place of her own to raise her own children, and that is affordable.
So might she be going back into a caravan, do you think?
When I said that, I've never lived in a caravan, by the way. I've just lived all over the place. Do you know what? I would wonder. I had a traveling business once where we traveled all over the country, and the next daughter up from her used to travel with us, and we'd sleep in the a tent, or sleep in the car, or sleep in the stall that we had that we carried around, and it didn't bother us at all. We were just, that's it, let's just knock down for the night, you know. But it's desperate situation, Tony, and it's the same across the country. However, in London, the opportunities for there's no opportunities there. People have got to rely on the support networks of councils, housing associations, or whatever other bodies can support youngsters getting into housing.
Well, it looks like maybe the days of actually owning your own property and not
Are
being
over.
afraid of eviction. Oh, yeah. Anyway, look, Chris, I don't know if you have got any sort of social media presence, or you can even recommend some publications or books where people can follow up this story, because horse housing is almost like the elephant in the room. It's the one thing we spend most of our time and money on, and yet it's a total disaster, and no one really wants to think it through.
No, they don't. And it's all gone. All the communities in London have completely gone because of house prices. But that is the only remaining community is in the Caledonian in Islington. There is no other communities left in London. So you don't even get the strength of a community around you. But by all means, I mean, I'm on Facebook and I'm not on many other sites. I cancelled all those years ago. It's Christopher Hills.
Hills.
I don't do Twitter and all those things anymore.
Are there any organisations around, you think, that are actually taking housing seriously in London?
No, but what I would suggest to everybody, that especially if they're like my daughter, where they're youngsters, you've got to go and sign up to all the housing associations and not rely just on the council. The council will take the easiest option. So, with my daughter, they could turn around to, and they only offer one choice. They could say to her, "We found a property in Birmingham. If you don't take it, we're taking you off our housing list." That's what's going on.
Well, I mean, it's understandable, isn't it, that people think, well, I'm not doing that. I can get a nice luxury caravan, park it up the street, and we'll live in that instead. I mean, this is almost like a kind of second wave from the big, like, convoys, caravan convoys of the 1970s. But I mean, there must be surely somewhere in London that is actually keeping an eye on housing. It sounds to me like you say maybe since the end of the big councils in London and that sort of thing, and Boris and people like that, that maybe there isn't.
There isn't. There's no major building. Yes, some of the councils do have small properties that are built and then shout and hold their hands up at, "Look what we've done. We've built a home with 30 houses in it." And it's like, what the hell is that going to do in
Well, I mean, in
somewhere
the
like?
meantime, the councils are quietly selling. I mean, we've just had here in Bristol, we just had an article in the local paper saying, well, the council are selling off properties, and they're not even telling councillors or any of the council committees what they're selling and where and how much and who to.
It's Tony. I can say this now because I don't have to work for anybody. It's as crooked as dot dot dot.
Okay, Chris Hill, thanks ever so much for joining us.
That you're very welcome, Tony.